I don't know if y'all noticed the subtle pressure that Barry put on me this morning when he said we're going to have potluck this morning. I guess he wants me to keep it short, so make sure we're out of here by morning, right? I know he didn't mean to do that, but I have to throw that out there. I want to introduce the topic this morning with a story we find in Genesis chapter 18. Beginning there in verse 1, goes through verse 8. We're not going to read that, just kind of basically tell you the story. That there are three individuals, strangers to Abraham and Sarah, that just walk up to his door. He sees them coming, and he talks to them a little bit, and he says, "Hey, I want you to stay with us for a little while. I want you to wash your feet, rest, relax, take it easy." And they agree to do that. And he goes into Sarah, and he says, "Hey, make some bread. These guys are here, make some bread." And then he goes and finds a young calf that would be fit for guests, basically. And he goes, it seems to me that you read into the story that not just does he go find a calf and perhaps the meat was already ready, but that he had to slaughter that calf and then get the food ready. And so I don't know how long he planned on these guys staying around, but it was at least as long to slaughter a calf and make some bread and all these things. And that helps us to understand, and that's what I want to talk about this morning, is the idea and the concept of just being hospitable. Abraham and Sarah were hospitable to these three strangers. And so we want to learn from that. What can we do to be hospitable as well? 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 9 simply says, "Be hospitable to one another without grumbling." And so let's talk about that command that we have in front of us, that we truly are commanded to be hospitable with one another. Here's the grumbling type of thing you might hear. "Yeah, but my house is a mess. Yeah, but I don't really have time." I don't know if Abraham and Sarah really had the time either, but they made the time. I mean, that's kind of the... You might hear, "Well, I need them to be gone by a certain hour. You know, I need that decompression time. I'm an introvert." We don't find those types of things in Scripture. So what does it mean to be hospitable? First of all, the word itself just means for us to be fond or generous to guests. But I believe that the concept of biblical hospitality is well beyond just being willing to host a guest and being generous to them or being fond of them. So let's get into what that means. We do find that there are three people that shows us the level of respect or honor to be given to someone who shows or expresses hospitality. And so we think of hospitality not as just a baseline, but something to be honored, something to be respected. As we consider elders, the elders in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 2, it says a bishop must be hospitable. So when we are looking for people to serve in the role of an elder, they must be hospitable. So this is something that you expect of a leader, of someone who is going to take care of sheep, to be the shepherd of the flock. So it's something to be honored. It's distinguished above other things. But we also find in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 10 that it says of widows who are widows indeed, meaning that they don't have children, whether or not they are going to be put on the roll, meaning that they can be supported by the church. So it's meant for someone who doesn't have the help that they need in their older life, when they don't have a husband to help take care of her or things like that. They don't have children, that it should honor their father and mother. That command never changes. Now, the command to obey changes when you get married, but the command to honor father and mother never changes. And so to honor your older parents, you might help them out, support them financially as they have you. And so we return the favor in a sense. But if that doesn't happen, if she didn't have children, it says in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 10 that if you're going to support her, she is to be well reported for good works. If she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. She's a hospitable woman. She's washed the saints' feet. She has relieved the afflicted. She has helped people along. She has shared her life. And that's really what hospitality is. It's a sharing. And it's more than just sharing financially or people in your home, but it's something to be honored. This is the type of person that you're going to honor with that support. If she has not done those things, you don't support her. So it shows us the level of honor that we are to give to her. But also we find in Romans chapter 12 and verse 13 that we are to be distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. So it's really meant for all of us. Some are going to be better at it than others, just like every other thing, right? Some are going to be better at talking to strangers about the gospel. Okay, then support them to go do that. Some are planters, some are waterers. That's going to be no different than hospitality. Some of us are going to be better at that than others of us are going to be. And that's okay. But we all ought to have that mindset. And so we need to be willing to do that. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 7, we have this statement made about the bishop. And again, we talked about this the other night. The Bible was not written with chapters and verses. And so sometimes we miss the whole context when we just take a verse and we lift it out of that context. But in Titus 1 and verse 7, it says, a bishop must be blameless as a steward of God, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money. Okay, so he says, first of all, not greedy for money, but he follows that up in verse 8, and that's where the disconnect sometimes is. In verse 8, he says, but a lover of hospitality. Do you see the contrast? I didn't see this at first, so that's why, to me, this was an aha moment. I love when I'm studying the Bible and I have those aha moments. And as far as I know, I've been studying the Bible since my dad was teaching me. I still remember the book that he was reading to me of the story of the Tower of Babel, and I had nightmares at that picture for whatever reason. I've been studying this a long time, and I'm still learning. I still have those aha moments. And it's just, and sometimes I'm actually reading the Bible, and I go, does it really say that? How did I never notice that it said that? That's this kind of a thing that happened right here. Not greedy for money, but in contrast to a lover of hospitality, someone who is hospitable. So we see in this somewhat of a definition of hospitality, right? Someone who's not willing to share versus someone who loves to share. That helps us to define what hospitality is by just looking at the opposite of what that is. So when we're talking about that elder, he is not to be someone who holds everything back, but rather that he shares his life. And it's much more than just the money. It's actually sharing that life. As we see in James chapter 2, verses 15 and 16. In James chapter 2, it says, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? And he's really helping us understand that the living faith. A living faith is one who acts out that faith, right? If I really believe something, if I have conviction and I'm convinced, then I'm going to act on that. We used the illustration the other night about our car. I believe that my car is going to start. Therefore, I put the key in and I turn it because I have an expectation that that's what's going to happen. Do I have actual proof? Only that it's happened before. Other than that, I don't really have much proof. But I believe that's what's going to happen. That's the same thing here. Faith without living faith is one that acts on that faith. Otherwise, we don't really believe it. We're not really convinced of it. We're not really convicted by it. So he uses this illustration to help us understand faith without works. And he says, if you have a brother who's in need and they come to you with that need and you say to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, the question is this, what does it profit them? Did they get fed? Did they have food? No. Do they have clothes? No. Do they have a place to sleep and get comfortable? No. See, We're not really acting out on what we need to be doing. That's not being hospitable. Now, we used the word the other night, propitiation. It's not just a normal part of my vocabulary. Neither is depart in peace, be warmed and filled. You know, I don't think in those, in that language necessarily. Here's what we do. And I say we because this is pretty common. I've done it myself, so I assume that many of you at least have heard it. Somebody comes to you with a need and then you say, well, I'll pray for you. Nothing wrong with prayer. Nothing wrong with saying be warmed and filled in and of itself. Nothing wrong with telling that person, I hope you go in peace. The point is that that person's needs have not been met. And so I can pray about it, and I certainly should, that would not be a recurring issue, right? But at some point, I've also got to be an answer to that prayer. At some point, I've got to be the one to do that, to help somebody out. And that's what it means to be hospitable, is being willing to truly share with someone that truly has a need. And we could talk about the physical needs all the way to the spiritual needs, whatever those needs are. And that might be, probably will be, an inconvenience to us in some way. But we can look at it as an inconvenience and grumble about it. Or we can look at it as an opportunity to bless someone and we can be happy about it. And that's really the difference in the idea of being willing to share. In Matthew 10 and verse 14, it says, and whoever will not receive you, nor hear your words when you depart from that house or city, shake off the dust from your feet. Assuredly, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. This helps us understand God's view towards inhospitability. Yeah, I think I said that right. If you are inhospitable, he tells the 70 as he's sending them out on a limited commission, he says, I want you to go to the house of Israel. Don't go to Samaria. Don't go anywhere else. Just go to them, and I want you to preach the kingdom of God. And as you're doing that, when you come to a city and they don't welcome you, shake the dust off your feet, move on, go to somebody who will. And notice what he says. It will be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah. You know what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah? Wiped out with fire and brimstone. And he says, that's better than being inhospitable. That's pretty serious to think that that's what God expects of his people and the view that he has towards that. And so it really starts by a proper attitude towards people, towards hospitality. How do we do that? How do we develop that attitude? In 3 John chapter 1, it's really only one chapter, but in the book of 3 John, beginning in verse 5, it says, beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you will do well. Because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles, we therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers for the truth. Send them on their journey. Give them what they need to have the energy, to have the necessities, those kinds of things, as you send them on because they are going out and working for his name's sake. So think about what you're doing is really to benefit them, but beyond them, and you're helping the kingdom. It's a bigger deal than just you, and it's a bigger deal than just that individual. And that's what I want to point out. You know, I have this picture up there. That is not my grandparents. But I have a very vivid memories, and that's why I have it, of the time we used to go to my grandparents' house and during the summer every Thursday, and we would spend the day with my grandparents. And one of the things I remember is that I pretty much got whatever I wanted to eat, and you wanted grandma's cooking. And I wanted beans and cornbread that she made the best. But this is really the memory that I want to get at. As we were leaving, they left with us. They came to the door as we went to the door. They went on the front porch as we went to the car. And as long as we could see them, they were waving at us. Every time. Without, and they always, well, it's, we could have been there for 13 hours. Oh, you don't have to go so soon. You know, they wanted us to be there, and they wanted us to send us out with their love. That's what 3 John is talking about. Send them out with your love. Their needs being met, comfortable in every way that they can. And 1 Peter 3 and verse 8 says, finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another. Love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous. We should be motivated by just courtesy. Just looking at somebody else and saying, I wonder what I would want in that spot. And saying, okay, if that's what I would want, that's what I'm going to do for them. If they need a place to stay, I would want a place to stay. I'll give them a place to stay. If they're hungry, and if I'm hungry, I want to be fed. There, I have proof right here. Just look at me. When I'm hungry, I want to be fed. So, if I know that you're hungry, you know what I should do? Feed you. You see, that's we look at that and we should look at this as something that's just common or fundamental. I should say fundamental rather than common, because it's not necessarily common, but it should be fundamental courtesy. In 2 Kings chapter 4, we read about Elisha and how he had gone several times to do his job, and he was passing by this house, and this woman and her husband would take him in every time he would pass by. And they came to a point where they realized they needed another room. He came by enough. So just think about that for just a moment. Here's this guy traveling through. Now, they know him well enough to know that he is a prophet of God. And he's coming through often enough that he stays there. And they build him a room just for him so he can have a place to stay. That is hospitality. That's thinking about somebody else and courtesy. This is not a picture of this, but I have gone to stay with people in their home, and they have a basket like this just sitting there. Now, I'm a pretty proficient traveler at this point. I don't necessarily need you to put toothpaste and a toothbrush and things like that in a basket, but if for whatever reason I've forgotten, sometimes it's just there. Provided for me. And not always is it in a basket like this, but oftentimes I get told, okay, it's over here. Here are the towels. Here's the soap. Here's whatever you need. And they just, you just walk in and get what you need. That's this type of attitude. I used to live in the Four Corners area, New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. And I would go up to stay in a house in Colorado. I don't know if you guys know Alvin Klein from Farmington, but he worked in that area in Farmington, and he would also go up to Cortez at times, which is where I was going. I was told the first time ever that I went to stay in this house, you can stay in Alvin's room. It was his room. He goes up there every month, and he stays there for 2 to 3 nights when he's doing his business. They told me, it's his room that I'm staying in. That was what this Shunammite woman was doing for Elisha. It was his room. That's hospitality, and that's what we are called to do. Hebrews 3 and 13, in verse 16 says, but do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. God is pleased with the sacrifice of our sharing with one another. And so we ought to seek to please God and share. In 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 10 through 24, we read of a story of Elijah now, not Elisha, but Elijah, and how he had called on a famine, had called on this widow to make bread, to bring him water and bread. And she says, I have enough just for me and my son. So what she did is she said, I'll make you some, we'll eat it, then you go on your way and we'll die. That's what she expected because of this famine. And yet Elijah encouraged her to go ahead and make some and said, you know what, there's going to be plenty. And there was. Now that's not always going to be the case as far as the miraculous making of more bread and more dough and that kind of thing, but just notice the blessing that came with that. I'm lacking. I don't have what I need, but I'll give you everything I got. That's hospitality. That no matter what it takes, I'm going to put you above me. And because of that, her son had died. Elijah came back, revived him to life, and she was blessed beyond anything imaginable just by doing that. That is a mindset of hospitality. All right, so how do we get there? What are some of the things that we can do to specifically be hospitable? Acts chapter 16 and verse 15 says, and when she and her household were baptized, this being Lydia, she begged us, saying, if you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come to my house and stay. So she persuaded us. She saw what Paul was doing. She benefited from what Paul was doing in his travels and obeying the gospel. And she said, I want you to stay with me. You don't have a place to stay. Come stay with me. So I want to help the workers. So that's something that we can do, is that we can help those who are laboring in the kingdom. Maybe it's a place to stay. Maybe it's food. Maybe it's a meal. Maybe it's gas. Maybe it's a flat tire and I'm helping you on the side. Whatever. That's what it means to be hospitable. Also, we see in Matthew 5, verses 13 through 16, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. This is something that you can do to help save and reach the lost, to provide something that they need, so that they can also be given the gospel, so that they glorify God. Now, later on, in this very sermon that Jesus is preaching, the Sermon on the Mount, later on in that, he's going to say, don't do your alms before men. Don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. So let's just deal with the discrepancy, with the seeming contradiction that's here, but Matthew 5 and Matthew 6. Here's the difference. Matthew 5. Do your good works that they may be seen that God be glorified. Matthew 6, don't do your good deeds before men that they glorify you. It's all about the motive. Why am I doing what I'm doing? I'm doing what I'm doing so that God gets the glory, so that perhaps this person might know God, that this person might know Jesus Christ by the benevolence, by the hospitality that I am showing them. Perhaps they'll come to glorify God because they see the goodness of God through me. And that's different than wanting the glory for yourself. If it's about you, you have the wrong motive. And don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. He's speaking of hyperbole, obviously, because my right hand can't not know, right, what my left hand's doing. He's going to that extreme to help us understand the illustration. But so in practical terms, here's what this might mean. You may not know how to do a Bible study with someone, okay? So you may not know what verses to turn to. You know the truth, but you don't know how to lead someone in a study. That's okay. So how you might get someone together that doesn't know the gospel with someone who can teach it? Share a meal. Have the meal at your house. Do good works for them. You're all eating together, and then you can eat from the Word of God. Those are some things, some basic type of hospitality things, for example, that you can do to be able to reach the lost and let your light so shine. In Psalm 133 in verse 1, behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. God is pleased with unity. And this is something that we can do with one another as we can build the church up through our hospitality, through sharing our lives with one another. The sweetness of good association shared in hospitality helps the body get stronger. Think of hospitality like food to the body. It will help the body to grow. Or maybe it's vitamins, I don't know, whatever that is. We can think of food like the Word of God and think of vitamins like hospitality. Because that's what it's going to do. It's only going to strengthen the body. You know why this works? This works because when I spend any time in your home, I see you how you truly live. And so if I invite you into my home, basically I'm saying to you, here I am. And when you see me for who I am, flaws and all, that should build that relationship. And so there's a vulnerability that's associated with this. You know, when I got here, I knew some of you some, knew some of you none. Those of you who I've spent time in your home, I've gotten to know better. We have been able to eat together and spend some time together, and so I get to know you while my feet are under your table. Or sitting there on your couch, or those things. I will tell you this for sure. I really know Chris and Charla a whole lot better. I've spent a lot more time at their home. I've been in their home. And the hospitality that I got there, they were vulnerable to me. In this sense. Here's this, if you need it. Here's that, if you need it. They even let me control the thermostat. I mean, that's pretty vulnerable, right? That's when it comes down to the dollars, right? Because I may blast them out in coldness just to be comfortable, whatever. I didn't take too much advantage of that. But you see how vulnerable they become? And they did that treating me just like family. That was the point. My kids, my wife, they know me better than anybody else. Because we're all together. We're most vulnerable. We are who we are. So when we have each other in our home, we are who we are, and we get to see that, and we get to know one another, and we look past all those things that might cause us to divide. Instead, we have this unity that truly builds the church when we have this kind of hospitality. And in Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 20, it says of the virtuous woman, she extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. The virtuous woman's home was better because she treated the poor with hospitality. And your family life will be better. Your kids will respect older people better if you have older people in your home. They will understand what it means to give. Your kids will benefit from that. Your children then will learn what it means to be hospitable if you show them, model it for them. Your family will become exposed to good influences. You're inviting that then into your home as you invite these people into your home. Is there a risk? Excuse me. Is there a risk to the negative influences? Absolutely. But you can teach your children that too. We're going to do this anyway, just like God loved us anyway. So you're showing hospitality just the same way. And in many ways, hospitality can just strengthen your home. And one of the things that hospitality does, and I want to point this out. At some point in your life, you are the one that receives the hospitality, right? Sometimes there's just a benefit to that. You need that, and somebody offers that, so you take it. I remember when we were first married, I had a part-time job at Chick-fil-A. My wife had a part-time job at Blockbuster. Two part-time jobs like that don't make a full-time job. We were poor. And we got the benefit of a man by the name of Richard Turman, who worked for Guy's Potato Chips. As he would go to the stores to restock the chips, he also had to take the ones that were about to expire off the shelves. They were still edible, so he would trade with the pizza guy, with the frozen pizza guy. He would give him chips, and the frozen pizza guy would give him pizza. And every Sunday, we would get about 5 boxes of pizza, 5 or 10 or however many it was that week from Richard, and we lived on pizza, frozen pizza, to the point where sometimes, even still today, you ask Lori, do you want some pizza tonight? You know, we had it a lot. Sometimes you're the poor married couple. Sometimes you're the poor college student. And sometimes you still need to be hospitable. That even in that moment, I don't know that this ever happened. If it did, I hope I reacted the way I should. But if somebody else needed that pizza, I hope that I passed it along to them instead of eating it for myself. That's hospitality. And it's not about the taking. That's the point. That's what I'm saying. It's not about the taking. It's about the giving. Now, we all need to be on a receiving end at times, but we certainly need to be on the giving end as well. And we need to do that in our home. And that's what we see about the virtuous woman. It's a home thing, because it's there that we're most ourselves. It's there that we can truly work with people. So we have this idea to be hospitable to one another without grumbling. Share your life with others for their benefit, for their good. And God will bless you. He'll bless your family. He'll bless this church, and He'll bless the kingdom for the work that you're doing. Think about the blessing for the kingdom of Israel for Elisha and Elijah, just by those two ladies taking care of them. That was a blessing to the rest of the kingdom. So be hospitable in that way. Are you ready to welcome strangers with bread? With the tender and young calf, like Abraham and Sarah? Now, they were ready in the sense that they got it done. They saw a need and they got it done. It doesn't matter really how long it took. But how about those that he did that for strangers? How about for those that you should care about the most? Your brothers and sisters in Christ. Are you ready to do that for one another? Without the grumbling, without the excuses, without the complaints. I'm going to close with this. God is hospitable with you. He shared the very best that he had in his son, Jesus Christ. He sent Jesus to this earth to live just like you and me, to be tempted just like you and me, and yet to come out that free and clear of all charges because he was innocent. And in his innocence, he went to the cross, a torture device meant for the worst of criminals. Because we are the worst of criminals. Because we have violated God's law. So he took the punishment that we deserve so that you can have his righteousness. Now that is hospitality. And not only that, with him he says, I want you to come to my home. He tells them in John chapter 14, where I'm going, you can't come. But I'm going to prepare a place for you. That's hospitality. What Jesus wants is for you to be in his home. And so just like the father of the prodigal son, he's asking you and begging you, come home. Come home today. So if you need to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, to be baptized in his name so that you can be free from sin, knowing that you are now a part of his family, where you can share in his blessings for his blessings, do that this morning. If you need the prayers of the church, one thing we can certainly do to be hospitable is we could share that time with God in prayer for you, and we will be, beyond that, we will be hospitable to your needs, whatever that may be, in counsel and study and all kinds of things. Whatever your need is, don't leave here with that burden. Let your desires be known by coming to the front while we stand and while we sing.